We always like to welcome back our guests, and it's certainly justified with Rhonda Britian, who continues to surprise us with new products. I think about this, Rhonda's Fine Foods, and it's hard to imagine it's such a young company. How about a brief catch-up for people who haven't heard your previous interviews, Rhonda?
Oh, thank you so much, Anne, for having me back on the show. It's really nice to talk to you again. Thank you
Well,
for
you
those
have a
kind
good
words.
product line. You have good
Yes.
products.
Thank you. That's awesome. So, Rhonda's Fine Foods, we were founded in 2021 with my co-founder, Steve Davis. We are a woman and minority-owned small family business, and we create a line of dips, sauces, and spreads featuring family recipes inspired by flavors of the world. We have three seasons.
Oh, by the way, listeners, she's in California, and we hope she's sheltering from the what they've got going on over there.
Yes, it's been quite stormy over here for sure. Like I said, we are a small family brand and featuring family recipes inspired by flavors of the world. Our line is sort of a heritage line. These are recipes that have been around for centuries and stood the test of time, and they're meaningful to us and me, especially in some ways. They're family recipes, and they kind of tie us to our heritage. We have three SKUs. We have Rhonda's Original Romesco that was what we launched with, and we won a Sophie Award for Best New Product of the Year in the dip salsa category for that first product. And then we came out with Rhonda's Spicy Romesco, which is a nuanced heat. It's, I would say, on a scale of 1 to 5, we're about a 2. So you get a nice little warm heat at the back end, a kind of an extra layer of flavor, I like to say. And then we recently launched Rhonda's Original Muhammada from the Middle East, and that's a walnut pomegranate dip sauce spread with beautiful depth in flavor from the Aleppo pepper and sumac. So our entire line is all natural, low carb, gluten-free, and vegan. So it sort of appeals to a wide variety of flavor preferences. And we're excited to introduce these somewhat little known flavors to the U.S., to the U.S. market. So that's a little bit about our story.
Well, now this recipe for the Muhammara line, I mean, the origins of it really are in Syria, are they?
They are. This is a centuries old. From my research, it goes back to, from what I can find, the 12th century in Aleppo, Syria, which is in the northern part and a very long inhabited city on the Silk Road in northern Syria. So right near Turkey as well. So that's where the Aleppo pepper comes from. But you'll find it in Turkish food and Mediterranean. Different countries sort of have their own variations using different ingredient combinations. My children are half Syrian, and so this is their father is from Damascus, but I really like to keep heritage alive through food, and so this is sort of in honor of my children's heritage.
Now, what's the kind of a combination that you make and
So,
that you're feeding your children?
the combination of foods that I feed my children right now.
Whatever, anything that will give our listeners a chance to speculate as to whether or not they might want to try some of this delicious stuff.
Ah, wonderful.
Which I'm doing right now with a spoon out of the jar.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. That's the best way to hit all those flavor profiles. Thank you. So I'm Mexican. Like I said, my children are also half Syrian, and so they've kind of grown up eating flavors of the world since they were young. And a lot of their relatives are no longer living, and so I believe that you know, cooking these foods, you know, it's a way to sort of safeguard our traditions, remember, you know, our heritage and celebrate it in some ways. So Muhammada from the Middle East is a walnut pomegranate dip sauce spread with the sumac, the Aleppo pepper, olive oil. And so you've kind of got, this one is a little bit savory, a little bit sweet, a little bit smoky, and then you have
smoky,
a hint of spice. So.
Now, you can use it in a number of different ways besides Peter eating it out of the jar with the spoon.
Exactly. There are so many. And that's what I love. Our entire line is really versatile. We are targeting the specialty cheese departments as new savory options to go on charcuterie or mezze boards. In specialty cheese, you have a lot of jams and jellies and honey and sweet things. And so, you know, when you're putting together some appetizers and boards, it's really nice to now have a savory option. I think it also appeals to vegans as well, so that you can feed, a wide variety of preferences. Beyond that, it's delicious on grilled or roasted seafood, meat, poultry, over pasta. And we have several restaurants in delis that are putting it on a specialty sandwich. And some of these sandwiches are amazing. They're really delicious. So, yeah, super versatile.
Yeah, pomegranate is such an amazing, unusual flavor, isn't it?
It is. I think it's, you know, it's a little bit sweet, a little bit tart. And right now, you know, we just are back from the specialty food, fancy food show in
Las
Vegas. What did
you think of it?
For us, it was amazing. We had such a, that was when we debuted the Muhammada, and it was so warmly received, and we had so much amazing press around it. But at the same time, a lot of talk about, you know, charcuterie boards. So I was able to participate in a big charcuterie board presentation. And then the talks were on Mediterranean flavors. And tons of talk about the Mediterranean flavored trends and especially food service. So we do also offer food service now. So we're really excited to sort of expand that arm of our business.
Well, you know, I think part of the fun of your company and you, for you, is researching all this stuff. I mean, how do you go about it all?
Oh, gosh. You know, food, I have been such a voracious reader and researcher. If I showed you a picture of my binders, I mean, I have thousands of cookbooks. That's on my list, is to write a cookbook. But, it starts sometimes. I might be at a farmer's market and see a really interesting ingredient. And then from there, I start researching it and finding all the different ways that you can use it. And then I'll go into trying some of the recipes. And then as I do with all of my recipes, I sort of start tweaking it and refining it and rewriting it so that it's sort of easier for consumers to make and use. And I can get down a rabbit hole, you know, with some of these ingredients. I love getting lost in a really specialty, food market. Berkeley Bowl, for example, near us, has a huge assortment of sort of exotic ingredients that you don't necessarily find in everyday grocery stores. So that's kind of how it starts.
You call it Berkeley Bowl?
Berkeley Bowl is over in Berkeley, yeah. And so they have some of these just unusual fruits and vegetables that you would not find.
Now, I mean, how do people go about seeing all that you offer and getting some?
So we have our website, which is www.rondasfinefoods.com. And so right now, all of our products are available through our website. We're also on Amazon, and then our retailers, both large and small, are starting to carry all three of our products. And so on our website, there's a Find Us button that you can push, and, you know, we always support local. So that's, we like that for sure.
Yeah, that's good. I don't, there's the world, of specialty food is so broad. I just wonder how you narrow it down. Now, you just described family connections to certain cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what steers you the most, or you do trends, or what? How do you direct your research?
Well, all three of them, really. I mean, I gravitate towards things that I like and that I have been making for many years. You know, the Romesco I've been making, you know, since my 20s. And both of the two dips typically have stale breadcrumbs, which I left out. So, like I said, I sort of tweaked the recipe, modernized them a little bit. And just in my research, so I know for my next one, I'm targeting something from Mexico. You know, I make my own homemade salsas and barbecue sauces and all of those things, but just trying to find something that's a little bit unique right now. I'm doing my research for Mexico. So, yeah, I just...
What's unique? It's been, you know, it's been mine for a long time, Mexico cuisine. Although, who's that woman we always have on who writes the definitive Mexican cookbooks? What's her name? Do you know, homie?
I can't recall.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, she's lived there for so many years.
Yep.
She really knows her stuff.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of these, you know, for the Muhammada, for example, this is in the Middle Eastern community, it is a very, very well-known, beloved, you know, dip sauce spread. But for the mainstream U.S. market, we're sort of introducing some of these flavors of the world. The same thing with the Romesco, you know, in northern Spain, you know, Romesco, they eat it and enjoy it and have since the 15th century. But here, you know, on occasion it would be on a white tablecloth menu. But now you're starting to, people want to try new flavors. They don't necessarily have the time or talent or the financial ability to go, you know, buy all of these specialty ingredients that it would take to make one sauce that's a little bit labor intensive. So we're excited to offer a shelf stable, all natural product that, you know, kind of makes these beautiful flavors easily accessible. I like to call it an elevated convenience food, for sure.
Okay, so but your niche is pretty jam-packed with competition, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, though, we're doing something a little bit different. You know, you don't see very many Romescos on the market. And from what I can tell, we're the only Muhammada that's a shelf-stable, all-natural product. So we kind of feel like we're doing something a little bit different than what everybody else is doing. And then we're really trying to stick to the premium, all-natural ingredients. You know, my background is in nursing, and so I do feel that food can be a really great component for our health. So I think you can make delicious food without putting a bunch of preservatives inside of it. So, yeah, we're kind of carving out a little niche for ourselves, for sure.
The one of these ingredients, I'm trying to think of what it was, I've tasted in so many different foods, but I've never, ever, sumac. I've never had pure sumac. What does that taste like?
So sumac is... It's a dried red berry from the sumac shrub, and it has sort of a lemony or a tart sort of flavor to it. And it also was known for its health healing qualities. I definitely want to research that a little bit more to see what that
what
was
is
all
it?
About. But that it was known it's a for their healing qualities. So
yeah.
I don't know what those particularly were, but I do know it's a really bright red, robust, beautiful berry, and it has this lemony tart type, you know, and then that kind of goes with the pomegranate that has a sweet tart, and then the Aleppo pepper, you're coming in with a little bit of heat from that. So the blend together, I think, is really nice.
You know, the flavor of the year was as predicted by one of those big commercial spice companies. I'm trying to remember what the name of the company is. The kind of stuff you'd find in the supermarket, but it's a huge, it's been around forever. McCormick & Schmick, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It said that the big flavor for this coming year is tamarind.
Yeah, very nice.
And I've, yeah, so somebody sent us a whole bunch of tamarinds. And now we have Cousin Richard has grown tamarinds in Tasmania, organic tamarinds for years. But I, you know, I've been eating it because I have it, you know, and somebody sends me, and it's supposed to be this hot new flavor. And I have it, Richard's wife used to add it to a lot of things like curries and things like that. But I've been reading that, I mean, that children associate with their childhood with candy, made, and I can't for the life of me envision this sour stuff being in candy.
Yeah, I have heard of the tamarind candy. I've never had it myself. I've had tamarind in chutneys, you know, like if I'm having a samosa, I've had a tamarind as an accompaniment to that, and it's really delicious. I haven't cooked with it extensively, but I'll have to dive into that research. But speaking to, you know, children associating flavors, you know, one of our customers who happens to be in his 80s from Valencia, Spain, I send him, you know, cases of Romesco, and he said it reminds him of his childhood. And I've developed this really nice friendship with him over that. But and he, interestingly, he would mix it in with yogurt, which, you know, that's how he ate it growing up. And so that just warmed my heart so much to be able to connect with somebody like that.
Now, on our website, you can find a really good article. I was very proud of the article on Valencia. It's such an interesting place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It says find, use your find function to find it.
For sure.
So I think it was an article written for the Tribune Review.
I'll have to take a look at that.
If you're looking for a further contact, the title of the article was "The River Doesn't Run Here Anymore."
there was a major river right through the town.
The river runs all the way straight through the center of the city.
Interesting.
And they diverted it. They, for some reason, I mean, there was a reason that they diverted it.
They had a huge flood.
Right.
That makes sense.
We're not going to have floods anymore. We'll make the big
step.
We'll
just move it.
And we'll get the water out of the way.
There you go.
What they do is they use the riverbed as the recreation area through the center of town. Oh, yes. You really should go to, with your emphasis on global flavors, you probably have great opportunities to travel.
Absolutely. It's definitely on our list to get to Spain. I have Spanish roots on my mother's side. And my dad, I have a fondness. My dad went on a trip when he was alive to Ronda, Spain. So he brought me home a big coaster, engraved with my name on it. So a trip to Spain is definitely in our future. We'd love to walk the Camino as well. So we'll see when the timing is right. We'll definitely get over there.
Well, I think your products are very high, and your standards are very high, and they're also very versatile because you've planned them that way. So, so listeners, check out the website of Rhonda's Fine Foods and look into some of the information she gives you on global cuisine. What's next up? What area are you focusing on?
Mexico. So will be from Mexico, although I'm also contemplating a truly spicy Muhammada as well, because people love a little bit of heat, and so I try and have something, you know, that appeals to everyone's flavor profile, but I think, you know, adding a spicy Muhammada might be in the future too. So those are going to be the next two.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people like heat. I mean, it really is. I'm not as crazy about
away.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want you to burn your, you know, I don't want to take away from, you know, if you're spending a lot of money on a premium product and I send your taste buds off, you know, that's not the goal of what I'm trying to do. But giving you a nice punch of heat at the very end, sure, definitely, I that's my goal.
Well, you keep up the good work, Rhonda Brittain. Again, listeners, tune in to the website of Rhonda's Fine Foods, and particularly check out this new line of Muhammara. Is that right?
Muhammara. That is. It's Muhammara. Yes. And the one final thing I want to say is that we have natural oils. You know, our top ingredients are the olive oil and then the nut. And so like a natural peanut butter, your oil is going to separate. So you do have to, you know, stir it up in the jar before you put it out and serve it. So I always like to mention that as well. So,
Yeah, but we've been doing that. We've been doing that since our main sourcing is from the jar.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Oh, dear. Well, much success to you, Rhonda. And
thank you.
Keep us posted on what you do next.
Absolutely. You will be the first to know.
And you plan a trip to Spain pretty soon.
You bet.
Valencia is like...
Both.
Our granddaughter is going on her first Spanish trip. She's been taking Spanish. And they're missing out on Valencia, and there's nothing I could do to convince them otherwise. But, I mean, they're hitting the highlights. But Valencia, it should not be overlooked. It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
I can't wait to see it. All right.
Stay safe in California with all that's going on there. Jeez.
You bet. Thank you both.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Yes, no, we're having Lisa Cheng Smith. Now, that's a name to conjure, Lisa. Lisa Cheng Smith, who has a wonderful shop or business of supplying something I didn't even know existed, which is Taiwanese products, food products. You're going to have to give me a tutorial on how what is distinctive about Taiwanese recipes?
Sure, yeah. So Taiwanese food is very reflective of the history of the island, which, if you're not familiar, is definitely defined by occupations of different kinds and a lot of different migrations. So, before the current state, like, it was occupied by Japan for quite a long time. And there's been different waves of migrations from China. And there's also actually 27 indigenous tribes that have predated everybody that influences the food. Yeah, and so the food of Taiwan, the recipes of Taiwan are really a combination of all those different influences. So the indigenous influence is definitely strong in there, but I think the more popular Taiwanese dishes can sometimes be thought of as almost like a middle point between Chinese dishes and sometimes Japanese dishes too. So,
interesting.
For example, a lot of Taiwanese home chefs use mirin in their recipes, but you wouldn't really see that in China. So it's just a big mix, kind of a melting pot.
You know, it's kind of like my background is Sicilian, and everybody came through there. I mean, left a bit of something. tell me highlights of what. What products do you sell that you couldn't get in a regular Asian grocery store or Chinese grocery store?
Yeah, sure. So we focus on artisanal foods from Taiwan. So these are, many of them are handmade completely, small batch, naturally fermented heritage foods. Many of the producers are really craftspeople, and they observe and, in my opinion, steward older ways of doing things. So they're also you know, preservationist to some extent. Like, you don't need to cook soy sauce over a wood fire anymore, but they really believe in the value of maintaining technology and access to that. Yeah, so they're, you know, these are agriculture, people working in agriculture, but they're also very much passionate about what they do. So we're a distributor. We have a store. We sell online. We sell to restaurants. But really what we're, at our heart, we're distributing these, you know, what I call heritage Taiwanese foods and Taiwanese ingredients. And
well,
if you go
I
to
mean,
Taiwan,
I was
you know,
I was stunned by the dried fruit. Never did I ever connect dried fruit with, and it was, I mean, I let a friend taste the mangoes. I mean, they're a revelation. They're fabulous.
Thank you. Yes, that's what we were going for. yeah, but the reason for that is we really are working with, you know, like I would say it's like we work with, for the dried fruit, that's our brand, and we actually work with just a very small handful of farmers that are very much in control of their process and quality, and like are they all have different principles, but they're very principled about what kind of products they're producing. So yeah, we represent these kinds of products from Taiwan. You wouldn't find them in like a bigger Asian grocery store or Chinese grocery store, probably because the price point is, you know, like not low, but also the supply is pretty small. So you couldn't, they couldn't supply like a big grocery store, you know. So it's really specialty.
Well, you know, I mentioned the dried fruits. Who knew? I mean, I had no idea. but yeah, but what are some of the other things that are specific to your supplying and typical of Taiwanese cuisine?
Yeah, yeah. So the soy sauce is one of our earliest product lines. So the soy sauce we supply is, you know, very much like wine. The soy sauce we supply is like a naturally fermented product. And also like wine, the terroir and the growing conditions and the skills of the grower like all make a difference in flavor. I think that's something that not a lot of people understand about soy sauce, because most of the soy sauce on the market is not fermented in that way. It's just produced or forced, basically. And with, in particular, like different regions of Asia have different styles of soy sauce. So the most typical style of soy sauce you'd get in the United States has wheat in it, which creates, you know, a specific kind of flavor. It adds some sweetness. Taiwan, as an island, doesn't have like facilities or base for growing wheat. So their soy sauce is actually absent of wheat and uses rice instead. And additionally, like most soy sauce uses yellow soybeans, the Taiwanese soy sauce uses black soybeans, which has a different protein content and then a different kind of umami profile. If you're just like a, you know, want some soy sauce, then, you know, you may not be that attuned to the differences. But if you're trying to make some, you know, really Taiwanese dishes, we hear often that people are like, oh, this is the correct style of soy sauce that we're missing, because the flavor is actually quite different. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you must have, of course, you were born here. Were your parents,
yes.
Are you first generation, second generation?
Well, I guess I'm first generation, and I'm the first one in my on my mom's side to be born here. But my dad is American. My mom is from Taiwan. Yeah, yeah. So I'm a mixed heritage, and she immigrated from Taiwan to the United States.
No, your dad's Smith? Your dad's
Smith.
Oh,
sorry. Oh, Smith, yes. My dad is Smith. Yeah, that's right. So I've got, I always joke, Chang is like one of the most common names in, you know, Taiwan, China, Smith in America. And there's only one Chang Smith, though. So. But yes, so my dad is Smith.
I hate to bring up a subject that has some ugly components associated with it, but what's the situation from the perspective of someone like you, who's dedicated to a Taiwan that doesn't exist in quite the same way as it used to, and there's a group of people across a short channel of water who might try to make it even more different. I mean, what are the real Taiwanese people? What do they think about?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a very relevant question. I can't necessarily speak from, like, you know, the complete Taiwanese perspective, but for sure we have our own perspective on this. So, you know, it is like the kind of cross-strait relations is for sure a big part of like our the day-to-day things that we think about. And actually, like, you know, for the facts are that Taiwan has never been a part of the People's Republic of China. So it's not that it needs to declare independence, it just is. But because of, you know, propaganda around that, not a lot of people understand that. Increasingly more people do. But when I started Yunhai, actually the mission of it is was to give voice to Taiwan through food. So the idea that, you know, people are super familiar with Japanese culture, may never go to Japan. Super familiar with, like, Korean movies and music, may never go to Korea. But they recognize Korea and Japan as the place that they are. And so I think we're trying to do that through food as well. So what you're asking about is actually a core part of our mission, is to actually promote Taiwan. Yeah.
To be really dumb, I think I heard some once upon a time that Taiwan is the biggest producer in the world of tennis rackets.
Of
tennis rackets, that might be true. That might be true. They're also
tennis rackets,
you know,
yeah.
The best, I don't know about that, but like the best bicycles, for example, are Taiwan's
okay.
A major producer of bicycles, and obviously chips and things like that.
When you say chips, you're talking
like
about the things that go in
technology.
Okay, technology stuff.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And that's what Taiwan is known for. But, you know, I think it still gets obfuscated. Like, does Taiwan need to declare independence or not? And, like, what's going to happen? And I think the reality is that for, you know, things have come and gone in terms of, like, how tense it's gotten. Definitely a high point now. But this idea of the neighbors across the strait is not new in Taiwan. So Taiwanese citizens have lived with this reality every day since, you know,
right.
Essentially the 1950s. And so that's a reality they've become really accustomed to. And for us in the States, we're hearing more and more about it now because of our own specific politics. It may come to a head, but just to say that this is more of a new topic for, you know, Americans, and it's not really a new topic for Taiwanese.
Okay.
That said, Taiwanese identity is developing rapidly. So, you know, Taiwan peacefully converted from martial law to a democracy in the 90s, which is not that long ago. And since then, the way that Taiwanese people have thought about themselves has evolved very rapidly since then. So we're also part of that. Story, I think. So, for example, when I was born in the 80s, my family would say, oh, we're Chinese, because there was no understanding of, like, a Taiwanese national identity necessarily at that time in the States. But now we say we're Taiwanese, and that's a big shift. And I think food identity plays into that as well.
Well, you know, what I always think of is, you know, I told you that a former editor of mine's father was, she was Taiwanese. Her born in America, but her father was a member of whatever the governing body is, a Congress?
Or, yeah, a legislator or something, yes.
Yeah, it was like that. And they used to have fights on the floor with chairs and whatnot, throwing them at each other. But I thought that was so bizarre and unusual until the latest round of congressional acts in the U.S. where they start punching each other up.
That's right.
So isn't that funny? So, did you find, like, there was a great need, people were not able to find the products they needed? I mean, how did you identify this business?
Yeah, so I identified it, I mean, it's very much like coming from my own needs, which, you know, I think if I had to just make up a business that suited people, it would be much harder for me. But I'm a, you know, kind of a home cook first. I always say that the reason I have Yunhai is because I'm a hell-bent home cook and I wanted to get the ingredients for myself. And so then I created a company to do it. But but the idea is just that, you know, my cooking, especially trying to understand my identity through food, is very research-based, and that led me to so many ingredients that weren't available. And even, like, ingredients created with, you know, specific production processes that would yield, like, better or richer flavors. And those weren't available, and it frustrated me because, you know, you mentioned that your background is Sicilian, but, you know, like, Northern European countries or, like, have like a lot more of their artisanal products available on the shelves in America. And I just felt that the same should be true for Taiwan. So I just started to go about that, because there's nothing wrong at all with conventional ingredients at big Asian grocery stores. But when you want that extra thing, to have it be totally unavailable and unrecognized felt a little bit off to me. So that's kind of what we're doing from in terms of like our offering, is that we're trying to offer, what is the like premium high end artisanal product from Taiwan, and like making
sure. Did you start with the shop, or and how long ago?
Yeah, so I started doing this in I founded it in 2018, but it took me a year to kind of like get things together. So first sale was 2019, and actually it was just me and I was doing it on the side. It was all online. So I did that until basically 2021 and 2022. Things just kept growing. And then in 2022, we actually opened. I brought in a partner in 2021. Her name is Lillian Lin. And in 2022, we opened a brick and mortar, which is a very small space. It's very much like the soul of Yunhai. But I would say, you know, like we are mostly an online retailer in terms of our sales breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
But the store really helped. Yeah.
Okay. What is the greatest concentration of customers, your customer base?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's really like New York City, because I think we have the store here, but New York City and then California. Those are like the biggest concentrations.
Yeah, well,
so we see a lot of customers coming from Texas and from, you know, like major metropolitan areas, but it's very much the coast. Texas has a huge Taiwanese population as well, Asian population. So that's where we see it. But it's not like all California. Like what we love is that, you know, there's a really great Taiwanese restaurant in New York City. You had to be in New York to go to it. If you were in like Madison, Wisconsin or something, and you want to cook a Taiwanese meal with a Taiwanese ingredient, like that's what we're trying to provide. It's like the people who want to recreate these dishes at home and learn about, you know, the culinary culture of Taiwan.
I mean, what's like, tell me, because I don't really know about all the different ingredients that you handle. I mean, what is the most sought after, not very available ingredient in that your Taiwanese customers flock to?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the dried fruit, and I know dried fruit as a category exists in the United States, but dried fruit as it exists in Taiwan did not. And so that's one of the top sellers that people flock to. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is that dried fruit in Taiwan is like an extremely common snack. Like you have it all the time. It's sort of everywhere. And Taiwan is really like such a hub of growing different kinds of fruit. So fruit in general is like part of the
culture. I never knew
that.
How little
yeah,
I knew.
So it's a, it's a really big part of the Taiwanese culture. Fruit, both dried or brined or cured or preserved, it's all part of Taiwanese day-to-day life.
I guess there must be a lot of Taiwanese restaurants. Are they in your customer base?
Yeah, we sell to some restaurants. So the restaurants we sell to are definitely more like like a fine dining type of place. So we sell to like a Michelin-starred restaurant in L.A. called Kato. We sell to Winsan, which is they're near us in Brooklyn. But we're not selling like bulk products to restaurants. We're definitely, our focus is much more of like an end consumer. Partially it's just that we, you know, have a limited supply and the products are really not packaged in bulk. But that said, like we do have a few people that they really want it, so they're willing to work with us. And that may be something we expand in the future, but we're starting with, the home cooks first.
But you're not ruling out going broader in your market.
Oh, sorry, say that one more time.
You're not ruling out the future going broader
that's
in your
right.
market.
That's right. It all depends on kind of our supply. And, you know, it's logistics, too. It's like if you run out of something for a restaurant, it impacts the revenue they can make, and it's very, very damaging to them. And so because our supply can be unpredictable, we're like a little bit more like, oh, if the home cook runs out of something, they can wait a couple weeks to get it. But for the restaurants, it's much harder on them. So we're kind of like risk averse in that regard too. So we're really only going to take on customers we can reliably supply.
Now, do you actually sell into China?
We do not. So we only distribute in the United States right now, and then occasionally we'll send international orders, but we are officially North America distributor.
So you're a world company.
We're not global yet, but we do have international customers, but it's not, they have to pay like a lot of shipping and customs and things like that. But we're definitely, focused on North America.
Well, I'm glad they came because I indulged in the supply of guavas and things like that you sent.
Oh, yeah, he ate it all. I barely got a taste.
I ate it all. I don't think I did give you a taste.
I tasted the mango because I tasted the guava as well. I mean, it was just wonderful, but I still left it for you because that's true love. How about that one, Lisa?
who says you have to share?
I wish you a lot of luck. You better give our listeners your, because we have a lot of cooks listening and chefs as well. Your email address. I mean, not your email address. Your URL for your website.
Sure. Yeah, that would be great. You know, I write a newsletter on Taiwanese food too. I'll send you the URL. It's a Substack newsletter, and that's one of our most popular activities. And we actually do that because we dive into the history of these ingredients. But I do it because sometimes the ingredients are not something that people maybe can afford or even need. Like if you're not really cooking this Taiwanese food, but you may want to learn more about. So that's another way of us telling the story of Taiwan, and that's just free to subscribe currently. So your readers may be interested in that.
How do you get on the list?
You just sign up, so it's I'll send you the URL, but it's yunhai.substack.com. You can also find the link on our website. But early on, I decided I didn't want to send a lot of promotional emails like flash sale this, like you might like this. I just wanted to send a long format informational email with value in the words every month. So that's what we do. That's kind of our email marketing.
You sound very sensible.
I feel like we're really spoiled because there's a Taiwanese restaurant that's less than half a mile away from our house.
Oh, that's great. You are spoiled.
Yeah.
Now, whether they're one of your customers, that's a different question.
Yeah. actually, we eat there so often, I should know a lot more about Taiwanese ingredients. listen, Lisa, I really, your kids have been very good, by the way.
They have, I know. I feel like, I'm like, what are they actually doing? I should go check.
Yeah, but I was just wondering the same thing. Again, the supplier of Taiwanese food and ingredients is Yunhai, listeners. And ask her, Lisa.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you. And enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.